You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Did you know that you can now download and listen to audiobooks on Google Play? That's right, with hands-free listening using Google Assistant or Chromecast, you can enjoy thousands of titles a la carte, no subscription necessary. There's even multi-device integration across the Google ecosystem. And for a limited time, you get $10 off your first one by visiting g.co/play/kick. That's g.co/play/kick. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play. And now, enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. Folks, no television series gets a more visceral reaction from me than AMC's Fear the Walking Dead. I suppose that's because it shows how quickly our law-abiding society could spiral into chaos, reminding us that even today, the line between civilization and anarchy is razor thin. And yes, the fact that it all starts to unfold right here in Los Angeles does kind of freak me out. A lot, actually. Now in its fourth season, the show that spun off from the original Walking Dead series is doing its first crossover series with characters from the original. It has brand new showrunners and some exciting additions to the cast, including Jenna Elfman, who plays a mysterious nurse caught between her need to help others and her desire to escape her past. Today, Jenna joins me on the podcast to talk about joining the Walking Dead universe, her own strategy in a zombie apocalypse, and how working on the show inspired her to think about preparing for the worst within her own family. We talk about how the show is reinventing itself in season 4, her first experience with a zombie on set, how doing her own stunts has made her a bit of a badass in the eyes of her two young sons, and what it was like interacting with the Walking Dead's diehard fans at Comic-Con. Plus, Jenna discusses what to look for in a good emergency kit, how for Jenna and her husband, the couple that podcasts together stays together, and Dharma and Greg in the age of Donald Trump. Coming up with Jenna Elfman in just a moment. Today I'm talking with Golden Globe-winning actress Jenna Elfman, who has been making a splash as a mysterious and emotionally conflicted nurse in Season 4 of AMC's Fear the Walking Dead. It returns this Sunday, August 12th at 9, 8 Central. Jenna, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm a weird case, Jenna, because I've only seen the first episode of the original Walking Dead, and I never actually got into the original, but I've been a fan of Fear the Walking Dead from day one, ever since. Were you a fan of either of the show when you first joined the cast?
I was certainly aware of them, but I hadn't fully engaged in it yet. And then when I got offered this role and decided to do it, I, of course, then binge watched all 11 seasons. So 8 seasons of Walking Dead and the first 3 seasons of Fear as I was starting into the 4th season. So now I'm very caught up, and now I'm a huge fan of both shows.
Okay. Are you partial to one or the other? Can you be objective? Or
I think I just love the whole universe. I love the Walking Dead universe. Mm-hmm. I love the concept of, you know, pushing humanity straight to the cliff of survival and begin the storytelling right there.
Yeah, I think that's probably what resonated to me about Fear the Walking Dead is, number one, it started out in L.A., so that hits really close to home for me in a very visceral way. Every time I watch it, the thing that I start thinking about is, you know, if there's an earthquake, I don't have any kind of an earthquake kit. So for an hour, I think about preparing an earthquake kit and then just forget until the next week when I watch Fear again.
Yes. Well, now people know what to get you for your wedding.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great wedding gift.
Thanks for the announcement.
Friends and family.
Yeah. The second thing I think that resonates for me is that with Fear the Walking Dead, you see step by step just how quickly society can unravel when there's some kind of a serious threat, when resources are scarce, when people's backs are against the wall. I mean, we think that we're so cocooned from the sort of social collapse that you see on this show. But, you know, if you think about, I don't know, the Rwandan genocide, how quickly that broke out, or what happened during Hurricane Katrina, a civilization, it seems, may be a lot more fragile than we want to believe.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think as a mother, I have a big accent on competence when raising my children.
Really?
Because I think being competent in life is and being gentlemen.
Okay.
Those are my two priorities.
Do you have sons?
I have two sons.
Oh, cute.
And yeah, being gentlemen is a huge, that's number one. But being competent, because I do feel, ever since I was young, I do feel that the human condition, humanity is very fragile. I don't feel like cultures survive and they don't go on very long.
Yeah.
You know? And all a culture is only what each human being's making it to be. And I drive through the city of Los Angeles, and I'm like, oh, God. I wouldn't say that there's so many great, you know, minds in this town, but there's also a lot of narcissism and, you know, not people that wouldn't necessarily, their first instinct isn't to reach out a helping hand or to think about the other guy, which is how you maintain a civilization. Yeah. So, yes, I agree with you. I think everybody increasing their competence is a good thing.
Yeah, good for you. I mean, it does give me newfound respect for doomsday preppers. I tend to be the guy who wants to make fun of people who have a bug-out shelter in the desert or, you know, have a pantry full of MREs just in case. But, you know, if shit hit the fan, those are the people who would have the best chance, and I would be completely out of luck.
So. Right. You would depend on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, extremes might be a little unnecessary, but I think there is a sort of happy medium of being well-prepared and well-educated on certain things.
Yeah. A while back, I had a guy named Max Brooks. Actually, he's Mel Brooks' son, and he wrote World War Z, zombie survival books and all that, and he is now working with the government because they found theoretical ideas about a zombie apocalypse had all kinds of implications for if there's a major hurricane, a disaster, an earthquake, if there was an outbreak of some kind of a pandemic. Fear the Walking Dead makes for pretty good game theory. You know, I always find myself watching and trying to figure out how I would handle a particular situation. Now that you're on this show, do you find yourself doing that same sort of thing? You know, what would you do? Where would you go?
Yeah.
Think about that sort of thing?
I definitely think about it now in a much more detailed way. I have a friend, John Foster, who's an actor. He and Ben Foster are brothers, and they're both actors.
Oh.
And John Foster is a survivalist. He knows how to survive off Mother Nature. And I always think it just like stuck in my craw, you know, because I was like, oh, I'd really need to like reach John Foster at this point. But it made me go, wow, I started researching. Once I started working on this show, I started researching really good survival kits
for
me and my family and which ones were the best and why. And my work on the show and with the prop department and the scenarios we get into actually did affect like my evaluation of what would be important in these. Because, you know, you can buy these like pre-made survival kits.
Right.
And some of them are just ridiculous. And you just know you'd burn through it in like a day and a half.
Yeah.
And then there's other ones that are actually very clever in how they have created themselves. And so I've been doing research from the point of view, which has definitely been affected by being on the show.
So what are the most important things that you look for in a survival kit then?
Well, there's like the bag can be used for different purposes or there's things attached within the bag that you can use for many different purposes.
Okay. Smart.
And, you know, different knives or different those multi-kit, you know, like knife things. There's been, it's the multi-use, multi-function situation.
Interesting. You know, my fiance bought one the other day and It seems to me that they didn't give you enough water. The water in the Capri thing. Sun pouches.
Yeah, you
tiny.
Don't. No, that's what I'm saying. You'll burn through it in a day and a half. But like those containers that have the water filtration system.
Oh, okay, smart. Yeah.
There you go. So then it doesn't matter where you are. You can filter the water.
Yeah, I had a weird experience just, I don't know, maybe it was a couple of months ago. I don't know what it was, but I was up late at night and I heard birds chirping. And that seemed weird to me, birds chirping in the middle of the night. And then I saw what I thought, I later learned that there were a couple of huskies that someone had lost or something like that. But outside the window, it looked like two wolves walking down the street.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they always say that animals know about earthquakes long before we do. And it's like the big tip off. So I started freaking out. I'm like, we don't have enough water. So I started finding every pitcher and thing that I could find and just filling it with sink water and putting it in the refrigerator. The next morning, my fiance looks in the refrigerator. She's like, what is going on? I'm like, what if there was an earthquake?
But it's interesting, your first thing you go to. It's like, it's interesting. It's an interesting self-evaluation to see where your mind goes first when you're actually faced with what you think might be a threat.
Yeah.
Like, where do you go first? And you went straight to water because you know that's the bottom
hydration line.
Like, you cannot survive without water.
Yeah.
The filter situation is where it's at.
Yeah, that's smart. Yeah. I got to check our kit and see if there's a filter in there. That's a good idea.
And remember to update your kits because stuff expires, and that's the other thing. You got to put it on your annual calendar as like an annual repeat to like check your kits because stuff expires.
Wow. Okay, well, that's good advice. How did you originally get cast as Naomi in season 4?
Well, what's I'm officially the June. There's the whole name.
Where are we with the name situation?
I am June.
Okay.
So basically, what's very funny is because, you know, with the cast, we're not always filming in the same episode or on different days, or you'll film one scene from one episode one day.
Yeah.
But then later in the day, the cast is there to film a scene from another episode. Every if you have to do some pickup shots. And so people will sometimes be like, wait, you're who? Wait, so what name are you now? And they get all accusatory. And I'm like, listen, it's like a funny thing. I'm like, my name is June, which we find out in episode 408, the end of the midseason. I just said my name was Naomi when Madison and company find me. Yeah. I just didn't tell them my name is June. That's all I'm responsible for.
And to John, he named me Laura
because I wouldn't tell him my name. But everyone accuses me of like changing my name all the time. I'm like, I lied once. But no, she's June. And now I actually went on such a rant, I forgot your question.
Oh, I forgot my question too. But it
drinking coffee. I told you, I turned into a chatterbox.
It does make me wonder then, when you're shooting out of sequence, does that lead to some sort of existential crisis for you?
Sometimes.
You're like, who am I today?
Who am I? when they were shooting, you know, the first half of the season, there's two timelines. I luckily was only in one of the timelines until the very end. So I did then have to take both timelines, all the scripts. I separated out the two timelines and put them each into their own script.
Okay.
And then read each so that I could really track all the emotional beats, not just my own, but the whole group. So I really understood where everybody was at in the storytelling.
Yeah.
This back half of the season has only one timeline. So I think there's this simplicity with time on this back half. But I actually, all the listeners are sitting there knowing what question you asked me that I've forgotten.
Oh, that's all right.
But you don't
that's
have
all
it
right.
on your computer?
I do have a computer. I think I started with the how did you get on season
four? That was it.
But I'm looking
you called
forward
me Naomi,
to
and I went on
this.
The Naomi rant.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will say that I am looking forward to the second half where you don't jump around too much here because I am very simple-minded and easily confused by most modern television series. So.
Yeah, but you binge-watched. Was it a little bit easier for you in a binge
I guess
capacity?
It was, actually, now that you mention it.
Yeah. But I know what you mean.
Yeah.
My agent called me and said, so they're bringing in some new cast members to Fear the Walking Dead, and Garrett Dillahunt is one of them, and they want to offer you this series regular role. And I was out of town, and so I couldn't go meet in person with Scott Gimple, and so we Skyped. And so he walked me through my character's backstory. They said, you know, Scott Gimple's now coming over all full head of content for the whole Walking Dead universe, and he'd like to tell you about what their thoughts are. I was like, okay, this is fascinating. It's exactly what I had been wanting to do, is I wanted to do some drama. I wanted a character I could play many levels. I wanted to bring my experience as a parent to storytelling, because it's such a for people who are parents, you know, it changes your life in its many, many layers, and you learn so much about yourself. So I wanted to bring some of that. And so I Skyped with Scott Gimple, and he walked me through her backstory and what's going on. And it was exactly what I'd been wanting to do. So I, of course, said yes and was so flattered that they thought of me. And I'm so grateful they thought of me and offered that role. It was just a nice thing to land in my lap after a lot of hard work.
Yeah, yeah. And you're such a welcome addition to the cast. And your character has so many great nuances. And I think in some ways sort of drives the season in the sense that she's a nurse who's helping people. And you kind of embody a certain hopefulness that we haven't necessarily seen, or not to that level, in the other seasons.
Yeah.
It seems like the cast in this season is maybe starting to move on from the survival mentality toward actually thinking long term and the next generation and wanting to actually make the world a better place or rebuild the world.
Absolutely nailed it right on the nose. That's exactly. Hope is definitely a theme that comes into the second half of the season. And it's definitely a whole new approach to the apocalypse as humanity, mm-hmm. as human beings surviving the apocalypse. Because you have first the shock of the apocalypse, like what has happened to our world? And then the next stage of that is just protect your family, protect those closest mm-hmm. to you. And then the next stage of that is, oh, people turn into different beasts when faced with the ultimate in survival. And then you have all that conflict and you have the learning curve of how to survive both the walkers and the crazy people,
mm-hmm.
and who's friend, who's foe.
Yeah.
And you have to start forming new factions. And so then you have the sort of that territory of the storytelling, that evolution. And then you get to, okay, there's friends, there's foe, there's people who swing back and forth because it's freaking hard. And we're all tested constantly. And when you're starving and tired and have heavy loss, it changes you. And when your life is threatened at every minute, every day. That's kind of what human beings were a very long time ago. And so we're at a sort of a new stage of evolution with human beings. And then you get to that stage in the apocalypse of, so who are we and what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what you said. More than just surviving. Like, can we do something with it? We've made it this far, so we must have some kind of ability to survive. So who are we? And what is our value and what is life going to be now? And that is kind of where our season four takes us.
Yeah. And it's interesting because here you have people who are literally trying to make America great again, trying to connect with people that they may not have an immediate familial connection to, or reevaluating their assumptions. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of that in the Make America Great Again today.
It sounds so funny to have to say it, because you feel like, to me, this feels like it's common sense. But we're all sharing this space together.
Yeah.
And yes, right. There's differences. That's what makes it cool and dynamic and exciting. But despite all the differences, and I don't want to, you know, sound too, you know, like soapboxy, but we all have hearts that beat. We all want to survive. Everyone wants to survive. So that's why I feel like the apocalypse backdrop is very highlighted to our current culture, because it doesn't matter what race, what anything, anybody is. We all share the earth. We all need to survive. And we all kind of are affected by each other's choices. And there is a common sense band of existence that involves just common sense help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a responsibility to your fellow human being from a brotherhood point of view.
Yeah.
And I feel like if that message is taught and people, you know, and children are educated about helping people, it's like it doesn't cost you anything and it only mm-hmm. makes the world better. Like any degree of help is worthwhile. You know, and just thoughtfulness and consideration. And it doesn't matter who someone prays to, if they're also generous and kind and respectful, you know, to their fellows.
Mm-hmm.
And that I know that might be an overly simplistic point of view, because But I don't care about race, religion, sexuality. I, like, what are your actions as a human being, and are people glad you lived?
Yeah, and I think that's something that we see in your character because, you know, she goes through this period of conflict between wanting to be a loner and not wanting to build a connection with anyone to the realization, and I think this is very applicable to today, that being a loner is the recipe for extinction.
Totally.
Community and connection is how we survive and thrive and rebuild.
Yes, 100%. And that is, you know, I think when people get a little too fixated on their differences and try to defend themselves against others in their differences, as opposed to, yes, there's differences. What do we have in common?
Yeah.
You know, there are so much that we have in common, and communication is one of them. Like, yeah. We all look at each other and we all communicate, you know, and when you can communicate to another person, you can find some commonality of some sort and something you can agree upon that you can then use that energy to improve whatever experience you're in. But there's a community becomes its own little organism. Like, you get a lot of people together. It's tricky because you have a group of individuals and each individual has their own mind, which is awesome.
Varied interests.
Totally.
Personal interests.
But what's the common denominator and how can every person then contribute to that common denominator for that group at that time to keep all those beautiful individuals as individuals, but moving as this organism of one as a group within whatever group that is. And I think that's the tricky part, why you need great leaders.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Jenna Elfman when we come back in just a moment. Today's podcast was sponsored by Espresso Monster. That's right. Now the guys behind Monster Energy have a delicious espresso drink for when you need an extra burst of energy but don't have time to wait in line at a coffee joint. Espresso Monster is a premium blend of smooth espresso and cream packaged in an 8.4-ounce can. It's just the right size and perfect for when you're on the go. Each can has 3 shots of espresso blended with European milk just the way the Italians do. At 150 to 160 milligrams of caffeine per can, it's sure to give you the energy you need to conquer the day. Espresso Monster has 2 delicious flavors to choose from, espresso and cream and vanilla espresso. That one's my favorite. Man, it is tasty. Produced in Denmark and the Netherlands, Espresso Monster is made with freshly brewed espresso coffee, hormone-free milk, and a unique energy blend that's complete with taurine and B vitamins. In fact, I had one just before taping this podcast. You know how sluggish you feel around 1 or 2 o'clock after lunch? Me too. And when I'm tired, I can't get anything done. But I had a yummy vanilla espresso monster after lunch, and it gave me just the jolt I needed to power through the rest of my day. Try it for yourself. Close your eyes, take a sip, and enjoy Espresso Monster today. And now, back to the podcast. When you came on board the show, did the producers tell you a whole lot about season 4 from the get-go, or was it something that they kind of slowly revealed to you?
They only revealed to me what was going on with my character.
Okay. Okay.
They didn't say what the whole situation was going to be. So no, I did not. I didn't know those big things that occurred in the first half of season. I did not know about them till I arrived my first day. Yeah, I did not know that was happening.
Yeah, you
know,
and of course, the death toll on Fear is pretty high. Did the producers say anything to you when you came on board?
Like, no, I didn't know anything
about
it.
Don't get comfortable in this role, or we reserve the right to kill you off at our discretion.
I think that's implied. I think you just have to know going in.
You know what you're getting into.
Oh, yeah. No, I was like, every script, I was like, okay, what am I getting killed on? Like, I just felt like your fate, you could either go 8 seasons or you could be killed. I mean, who knows? I mean, it's literally, it's like doing network television, you know, same, no difference, except it's way better storytelling. But I feel like, you know, you just don't know. And and so I'm savoring every minute of it. I'm grateful for every minute of it. I really enjoy the writing and the direction. And we have brilliant artists. I mean, really wonderful DP, directors of photography. Mm-hmm. The cinematographers are fantastic. You know, they in this season 4, there's new cinematographers, new editors.
That's
the whole
right.
way of it being shot. Michael Satrazimis came over from The Walking Dead. He was their cinematographer and became their director, one of their directors. And he came over this season of Fear and became one of our executive producers. Mm-hmm. And he also established the look and aesthetic of the show since he had been a cinematographer, and he is, you know, And so they created a whole new look for the show in terms of where you place the camera. The camera doesn't move to find you. It often are locked off shots, like an old Western.
Yeah. Yeah. And also the sepia tone
yes.
used in the flashbacks. It seems very like that. Very
yeah, that was
like
more
that.
The present day was the darker.
Oh, okay.
The darker was the present day because it was dark. It was yeah. more, it was after everyone had the loss. And the flashbacks okay. were sort of colorful and more optimistic.
Okay.
And
I told you I have trouble with figuring out
no,
timelines.
It's fine. You're not the only one. But that was a clever yeah. visual way to help people feel oriented yeah. as to what timeline they're in. But it's just they kind of gave the show an aesthetic overhaul.
Yeah, and it must be nice for you to come in at a time when the show is reinventing itself sort of because, you know, as a new actress on an established series, that can be very intimidating a lot of times.
Utterly. Yeah. 100%. It was completely intimidating. Even so, it was still intimidating.
Yeah.
I had a big learning curve to go on, and I really enjoyed it. And I was highly uncomfortable a lot of the time as I was learning new things about myself as an artist. I was learning new things about this mythology, you know, and it was a lot of sensation. And I started really finding my groove by the second half of the season, which I'm very excited about.
And of course, it's also the first crossover season
yeah.
that Walking Dead has ever done between the two shows. Was there any kind of a rivalry between the cast of the two shows?
Well, you know, they're in Atlanta and we're in Austin. So
yeah.
I'll sometimes see them at conventions, you know, because we'll go to fan conventions and
oh,
then we're
yeah.
all there and we see each other. But actually one of the Walking Dead cast was my next door neighbor.
Oh,
and so we would sort of powwow over the fence and then I would see a bunch of them. I have another friend who's on the show and then, yeah, we would just powwow at conventions and it's
yeah.
so lovely and sweet and everyone is just cool. So I don't think there's a competition from us. I think a lot of people
yeah.
like to throw it out there and try and
sure.
create one.
Sure. But this is the first time that you guys were actually working with each other across the two shows.
Yeah. I mean,
well.
As a newcomer, I just thought it was so great.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like I was already one and then there was a crossover coming into my show. But I think that's the thing, too, is rather than having Fear be like this other secondary unit, it's really been brought under.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's smart to just create a Walking Dead universe, you know, and a Walking Dead family.
Yeah.
Instead of this kind of otherness that I feel that maybe
yeah.
Fear previously had is like this otherness. It's like, let's bring the storytelling under one umbrella,
yeah.
you know, and definitely there's different aesthetics and dynamics and wholly different characters. But I like the idea that it's
yeah.
a little bit more united in
oh,
its...
Yeah. It may never end. I mean...
Yeah, but how great. What a great institution
Paris,
to have
Dead
generations.
Dubai.
Yeah, and you have different generations watching it.
We don't even know what happened everywhere
it.
Else outside the
it's
U.S.
Fantastic.
And Mexico. So.
Or we may.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I need to
Wouldn't
keep
it be
watching.
Fun to see what's happening in other countries? I'd
yeah.
be interested in that.
I'm
I'd watch that
curious.
In a second.
So even though you're relatively new to the show, you have had opportunities to go to Comic-Con and those kind of things
yeah.
and interact with the fans. What
yes.
are they like?
Oh, they're awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a fan too.
Yeah.
You know, and so I love talking. Well, clearly I love talking. But I love talking, sharing with them their passion. You know, I love talking about all the characters, the relationships, the story. I could talk about it for. I love it. I'm totally engaged. So I find it really fun. And, you know, I think it's cool that these conventions exist where people with this common interest, because it's not like a light passion. It's
mm-hmm. oh yeah,
heavy passion. And I think it's cool that people who have that passion can all come together and
yeah.
experience it together. I think it's cool.
Yeah, but you know, it's a thin line between love and hate with some fans.
No, yeah, totally. That's
as
been clear
a new
too.
Character.
Sure. That's okay. I'm tolerant
of some
to
of that.
All that. I, yeah. The only thing I request is, in my own little head, you know, is that people do understand there's a difference between the actor and the character. Because sometimes
really.
If they'll get upset that like a character exists,
yeah.
then they think that it's something Jenna Elfman is personally assaulting. Like if they have a fan, you know, and I like have a gun aimed at someone there, I'm like, this is not Jenna Elfman. Like,
yeah.
you know what I mean? So that's the only thing is sometimes they lose... Occasionally, you know, they'll just get
yeah.
lose differentiation.
Yeah.
And differentiation, I think, the ability to differentiate
yeah.
is
very important.
Important.
Yeah. Do you ever go on any of the message boards and read some of the fan theories about your character?
No. Only because I'm raising two children, okay. And I am heavily committed to that, and okay. I don't have a lot of spare time in my life with filming in Texas and living in Los Angeles. I've been with my husband for 28 years, and you know, as you're engaged, you know, having a relationship is its own little creation and takes time and mental energy and attention. And then there's two small children, and that takes a lot of time and beautiful attention. And then there's just life stuff, you know, you've got life and stuff to maintain and correspondence to do. And so I'm very busy.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah. Now, it must have been really surreal to be on set with this show, because, I mean, it's like Mad Max, this post-apocalyptic set piece.
Oh, it's fantastic.
The walkers. What was your first scene with an actual walker like?
We were in an oil tank.
Oh, yeah?
And my character had fallen, was on top of an oil tank, and the bottom gives out, and she falls into this oil tank, only to realize it's full with walkers. Excuse me. And there's no escape, and I lose my knife. So I get to kill a couple with my knife, and then it's all slippery, and my knife, you know, gets lost. And that's when the character Madison, drops in and saves my life. So it was very intimidating because there was like 9 stunt people, and I had to learn, which I love. I was a professional dancer, so I like choreography. I'm comfortable with choreography. I need choreography in a big fight sequence, like paint by the numbers, you know? It's like this beat, that beat. Yeah. It's very organized, and I like that.
Yeah, and you do your own stunts in this, right?
As much as I can, I mean, I did the thing where I fall from the top, and then I fell, like, 4 feet onto a pad? No big deal. And then a real stunt person fell the, like, 8 feet, you know,
from
the top
into the teamwork.
Thing. Yep. And I'm very appreciative of those talented stunt ladies. I love being physical, so I try to do as much as I can myself within reason. But I had to learn all this, you know, choreography on where to grab them, you know, because you're working with choreography of stunt people. There's also the sort of rules of walkers and where you need to hit them. And then there's the slimy, gooey factor of the oil that you have to play. Yeah. But a lot of that choreography, you really have to work with the camera. Because the camera, especially on Fear, isn't moving very much. So they can't, if you don't get it exactly right at the right angle, and it has to be the correct angle for the special effects people to then insert all the blood.
Yeah.
If you don't get it right, the camera's not going to move to find the right angle because of the aesthetic of the camera work that they've created. So it was like 9,000. I had to multitask so many things. And that wasn't just one walker kill. It was repeated, you know, turn, get this guy. And then you have to hope they step onto their mark properly. So that was a lot. And we're all in water. We're like drenched for hours sitting in this oil tank of, I still don't know what I was in all day. I really don't know what it was. And I didn't really want to know. So that was
messy.
Yeah. And it was challenging, which I liked. It's very stimulating, but it was daunting. The first one.
Was that the grossest scene you ever had to do?
Oh God. I literally, my first several episodes, I was like wet. Then we had like a water park scene where I was wet and going through green mossy old water park, killing walkers in the water park. So that was disgusting. I think the water park and the oil were probably two of the most disgusting. Yeah. Oh, and then I was muddy because I washed up in the Laura episode, in episode 405. And it was like 29 degrees outside, and I was in the actual river, half in the canoe at like 3 a.m. covered in mud and goop and special effects goop and real goop. And those were like my first 4 episodes. So it was a whole lot of wet goo grossness.
Your little boys must think that you're quite the badass.
Yeah, they like
it. Stunts.
I said to my oldest the other day, he just turned 11. And I was like, let me ask you something. I go, am I like a cool mom, or am I like normal mom? Like when you look at it, like, am I a cool mom, or am I just like mom? Like, am I embarrassing mom? He's like, no, you're mostly cool, sometimes embarrassing, often embarrassing, but still cool. Does that make sense? I was like, yeah, that's cool. As long as cool's still in there, I'm good.
Do you let them watch?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, they like knowing what I'm up to, you know, and also when they come to Austin, because I fly back like every weekend for 24 hours. If it's a lighter episode, they come there. Mm-hmm. And if I have sometimes I'll have two episodes off back to back and I'm home for a month. So it's very hit and miss. Yeah, so we just kind of take it week by week. But then they're invested. That feels like a second home to them. They are a part. Yeah. My apartment there is their apartment. So that it doesn't feel like just mama is absent. I don't want that. And it's a very tricky line to balance being away as the mother of two boys. I mean, even if it was two girls, but there's something about, for me, my boys, you know, it wouldn't matter. It's you're away from your kids. You're the mother. It's a thing.
Yeah.
I think it's easier for a father to be away than the mother. I don't know. Yeah. It's just, you know, they came out of my body. It's there's a connection. We all know.
Yeah.
Good or bad, mom is a is a thing,
so
you know.
Do you feel pretty competent about balancing
the
work-life balance?
I do. Yeah, I work really, really hard at it. I give it a lot of my attention. Yeah. I care a lot. It's not okay with me to just be like, they're fine. You know, I can't be a parent like that. I really do work hard at it.
Well, before we go, I have to bring up Dharma and Greg because, you know, I look at it today and it almost seems quaint. You have a conservative Republican and a liberal hippie being able to treat each other as a human being, much less falling in love and getting married.
Right, yeah.
I mean, today no one on either side is even talking to each other. We're so quick to demonize. Do you think that a romance like that would even happen in this environment?
Yes, just not in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, the line is so drawn in such a heavy, dramatic, histrionic way. I feel like both sides in that capacity, when it gets that histrionic, are violating the key things they wish the world would be. They're being the way they wish what they're fighting about.
Yeah.
And that's why I talk about common sense. Yeah. It's like, can there be a political party called the Common Sense Party?
Right.
Please. Please. For the love of, I mean, please. So
it's always the other guy who's uncivilized, breaking societal norms and so forth. We're never guilty of it. So
yes.
No matter what.
I get you. I have friends that are all parties and I love them all for all of their viewpoints. But my thing is I look at their actions and I think you have to look at the actions of human beings.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't matter what skin color, of any of the categories of humanity, none of it matters except what are the actions of that individual human being in front of you, period. That's where it ends. Because I know white people, I mean, that are horrible. And I know wonderful. I know Asian people. I know Koreans. Like, I want to be in their family. You've met everything. It doesn't matter. Straight, gay. I don't care what religion. I don't care. I really don't care what differentiating, identifying quality someone is categorizing themselves by. What are their actions in this world? And is it enhancing the survival of themselves and those in their immediate environment? You know, on the main, or is it, are they harming the main to preserve the few?
Yeah.
You know, and you can't please everybody, of course, but there are common threads of humanity that we can have in common and keep
Absolutely.
It simple. There is a simplicity and a beauty to simplicity. And I'm done with my soapbox. I just want a common sense party. Can someone please start that? Please?
I mean, with the revival of Roseanne and Will and Grace and all these shows, I have to think that there's been some discussion of reviving Dharma and Greg at this
point. There hasn't been a serious discussion,
no?
Believe it or not.
I'm shocked.
I know.
Of all the things in this climate, that seems like the one that they would want to revive.
Yeah, I know. I don't really know. I've said, you know, of course I'm down for it if it's done well.
Yeah.
I have mainly been pushing to try and have 20th Century Fox make all the seasons available because I think that it still holds up because we
Definitely.
Never reference pop culture very much. And so it's not sort of categorized. And it just feels like timeless. The comedy still holds up. The relationships hold up. And I just want to make sure it's available for future generations, you know?
Yeah. Well, we just have to wait till the end of season 4 here to see if you'll be available for it. Also, I want to plug your podcast, which you host
thanks.
With your husband. It's called Kicking and Screaming. What kind of things do you guys talk about on there?
Well, you know, the funny thing with Bodhi and I is we are very different. And we have somehow managed to stay together for 28 years. And people say, that long in Hollywood? How do you do it? Yeah. And we say kicking and screaming because okay. That's kind of the nature of our relationship. We're best friends, but we are in conflict often. But humorous conflict and sometimes not so humorous conflict. Yeah. And we feel like no one ever talks about relationships for real.
Right. Everyone wants you to think they're perfect.
No. Yeah. And especially with Hollywood couples, I feel like it's always, what the publicist wants people to see.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they're divorced and you're like, but they looked so happy.
Yeah.
Or in television shows, it's either like marriage is so painful or, oh, it's like laugh track. And it's all of it. And so we talk about it. We talk about our relationship very candidly. We withhold nothing. We don't edit. We don't re-record. It's just us.
Wow. That's brave.
And we film it as well. So you can listen to it or watch it.
Yeah.
We film it in our house or our friend, if we're depending on where we're at, we film it wherever. And we talk it. We talk sex. We talk, the politics of marriage. A relationship has politics.
Yeah.
And I'm a strong woman. But I love men. And I'm also a feminist, but I'm also love contributing and making and helping him. But I'm not great at it. Because then my feminist side kicks in. I'm like, dude, seriously? Get it yourself. or the double standard. I'll throw the double standard. I catch him. And he was raised by a feminist hippie lesbian.
Wow, you guys are your own Dharma and Greg.
We
right
totally
there.
Are. And I was raised, my parents were married 60 years.
Yeah.
And he was raised by a single mother who had a weekend. And he didn't really know his dad till he was much older.
Okay.
So we have very different upbringings. Yeah. I'm very close with his mom. She's over every weekend. She's an awesome grandma. But we have very different points of reference. We have different, like, his manners on things, because how he was raised. And she's a self-professed contrarian.
Yeah.
And I was raised very, like, what will the neighbors think? Please, people.
Yeah.
We are so different. And we're always, like, getting annoyed with each other because we just bang into these kind of altered educations,
great.
We talk about all of that, and that is our podcast.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
you must get some great feedback from your listeners.
People like
who
it
feel empowered or feel like they're not alone.
Totally. Or they're like, wow, I don't feel as crazy as I thought. You guys are way crazier. Or I want a relationship like yours when I finally
that's sweet.
Get one. So it's fun. We have a good time.
Beautiful.
It's dynamic. It's R-rated. Do not listen to it when there's children in the car or in the house.
Okay. Kicking and screaming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's it on? iTunes?
It's on iTunes.
Okay.
Yeah. You can listen
check
to it on, there's a normal podcast app.
Stitcher.
Yeah. We're on Stitcher.
Okay. All the podcast places. All,
yes.
Everywhere you like to listen. Check
exactly.
it out. Kicking and Screaming. And once again, season 4 of Fear the Walking Dead returns to AMC this Sunday, August 12th. Jenna Elfman, thanks so much for talking
thanks
with me.
Thanks for having me.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Jenna Elfman for coming on the podcast. Just a reminder that season 4 of Fear the Walking Dead continues on AMC beginning this Sunday, August 12th at 9, 8 Central. For more information, visit amc.com and follow Jenna on Twitter at Jenna Elfman. Today's podcast was brought to you by Espresso Monster. When you need energy on the go and don't have time to wait in line, grab Espresso Monster. Espresso Monster is a premium blend of espresso and cream made with freshly brewed espresso coffee, hormone-free milk, and a unique energy blend complete with taurine and B vitamins. Each can has 3 shots of espresso and comes in vanilla espresso or espresso and cream. I wouldn't even be recording this podcast right now if I hadn't had a vanilla Espresso Monster after lunch today. It's delicious, and it was just the jolt I needed. Try for yourself, folks. Close your eyes, take a sip, and enjoy Espresso Monster today. Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Did you know that you can now download and listen to audiobooks on Google Play? That's right, with hands-free listening using Google Assistant or Chromecast, you can enjoy thousands of titles a la carte, no subscription necessary. There's even multi-device integration across the Google ecosystem. And for a limited time, you get $10 off your first one by visiting g.co/play/kick. That's g.co/play/kick. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.